Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Politics Done Right. I am your host, Egberto Williams. This is the progressive program that will take the mystery out of politics. This is the program that will encourage you to make sure government becomes we the people. Whether you are liberal, conservative, or otherwise, you get to air your point of view. Remember, you can also send me a tweet to EGBERTOWILLIES. That is, at Egberto Williams. Let us engage. It is politics done right.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Thank you so kindly for spending this 1 hour with me. We have a whole lot to discuss, don't we? Are you going to miss Obama? Mike Jones asked right in the beginning of the show. Am I going to miss Obama? Well, I think Obama has had his run. I think it's time for new blood, to put it bluntly. I'll miss him. You know, we kind of get used to familiarity, but I think it's time to move on. I think it's time to get somebody new in there. To put it bluntly, I think it's time to get a woman in there. I think it's time for us to have some estrogen over testosterone and see if it does better for the country. So that's my answer to you, Mike Jones. I think President Obama did a very good job. I think there's a whole lot more to be done. I think more importantly, I think we as the average American citizen have to get engaged and force the hands, not only of whoever becomes the next president, but force the hands of all politicians, bar none. In other words, for a lot of times when Obama was in power, or while Obama is in power, we didn't put it, the pressure needed on Obama. I think we've learned our lessons that a good person is not good enough for the presidency. We have to be the ones that push things. But anyhow, we're going to have a great show today. We're going to talk about the debate, Trump misogyny, the Koch tweet, which I think was a very good thing. A lot of folks told me, oh, why did Howard Dean go there? I think Howard Dean did the right thing in going to the Koch tweet. Many of us were thinking that. And it's not only that we were thinking that, but we had reason to think about his behavior and potential use of controlled substances. So, yeah, I think that was a good thing. But mostly I want to concentrate on the debate and what you thought about it. I want to concentrate on the new twist in the way the misogyny is being spun on Hillary Clinton. I'd like to hear your views on that. And I'd also like to kind of hit on, where do you think we go from here? What do you think needs to be done to ensure that we have the right person winning this election? So please remember, this is a call-in show. The telephone number is 646-929-2495. Again, you can call into the show and be on air, 646-929-2495. Of course, if you want to talk or add your input to the show as well, just go down here. If you're watching, by the way, we are on Facebook Live. If you're listening on Blog Talk Radio right now and want to see it on Facebook Live, just go to Facebook Live, or just go to Facebook and look for Politics Done Right and go to our page. We're live streaming on Facebook Live. You want to talk on air where everyone is going to hear you, 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. If you want to be a part of the conversation verbally, like I said as well, I will be watching whatever messages you stream here on the right below the post on the live stream here on Facebook. Do you think the police are racist? If you think Trump will make it worse, police reflect the population. Police reflect our society. What that means is whatever percentage of racists we have in our society is what you have in the police department. whatever percentage of good people you have in the society, you have in the department. The difference is policemen have the power to use guns. Police officers have the power to kill without you first inflicting any harm to them. In other words, their code of conduct says if any particular police officer feel themselves in danger, they have the legal right to kill you. Well, for most people who look like me, police generally have a larger fear. It is an unnecessary fear, is a false fear. It is a fear rooted in our culture that demonizes Black men and highlights the negatives that Black men do. What do I mean? If you look at the movies, the Black engineer, you'd never see somebody like myself featured in a movie. I'm an engineer and quite a few other things. But the first people that get featured in movies are stereotyped when they're Black to play certain types of roles. And then that materializes into the psyche of the society in general. So what I talk to people about, and I am a little bit off subject, but you brought the question up. What I talk to people about a whole lot is that I do not demonize society as a whole or individuals within society, because I see individuals within the society as being conditioned by society. And as such, I give the vast majority of people, racist or not, a pass until I have gotten the chance to inform or have a dialogue. So let's see. Christy says, I would love to see a study of how many police are actually killed by Black people to instill this cop. Well, not a lot. I mean, most police are rarely, I don't even know if they're ever, or but they're rarely ever killed by Black folks. Now, we had Dallas, and we had the attacks in Dallas and Baton Rouge. I don't quite remember if we know exactly the race of the person who did that. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the case. More white men kill cops than anyone. That is absolutely true. But that said, the demonization or the characterization that we have in the media, when you watch TV in Houston or any other major city and you see crime, most of the crime that you see is Black, but most of the shootings aren't Black. But somehow the vast majority that you see on TV are. So you have to ask yourself the questions of producer, et cetera. Likewise, whenever many times when certain crimes are described on TV, if the crime doesn't have a race associated with it, there are good assumptions that you can make on that. So that is basically the case. So what I'm trying to say, folks, is simple. I look at police officers as I look at the society at large, which the society at large has its biases, and so will police officers. The only difference is police officers have their biases. And in having their biases, many of us come out at a disadvantage from those biases, and it is incumbent upon us then to educate. Robert Mark says, did you ever analyze what the term keep order means? It means maintain the status quo. You're absolutely correct about that, Bob. It means maintain status quo. If the current norm is to oppress people of color, law enforcement is tasked with the job. Yes, and I think that is not at all in contrast with what I'm saying. And I think actually that corroborates what I'm saying here. There's a reason that we have these divisions, and the purpose of these divisions has nothing to do with white, Black, or otherwise. The purpose of these divisions have to do with power. And what I mean by power, it is intended to maintain a plutocratic power. In other words, right now, we have an extractive society. What I mean by an extractive society, and I'm going to get on subject in a little bit, folks, but this show belongs to the people who are listening, the people who are watching, and the people who are asking questions. So you can always change the direction of this show, because if you ask something, I'm going to answer that. So going back to the question that you mentioned when I started to talk about plutocracy, power, and racism, one of the issues is as follows. People are not inherently racist at all. And I can see that. I can do experiments to show that without a problem. It is a learned behavior. And then the question that one has to ask is, why is it a behavior that we decide to teach? And it's a behavior that we decide to teach in order to control, right? We have an extractive capitalist system in this country. And in having an extractive capitalist system in this country, you can extract from the downtrodden without much problems. But when you've completely extracted from the downtrodden, you have to go to the next one. And it so happened that right now we have reached the limit of which you can extract from the other. And when you're done extracting from the other, who do you think is next in line? Well, it's the average middle class white people. And that is who our economy is dramatically affecting. Now, the plutocrats out there, most of them not looking like myself, will tell you that your problem isn't that they are squeezing you. Your problem is because of those people coming from over the border. They're because of people like me taking all the monies that you're putting in and welfare, et cetera, when it's patently false. No one race has a dominance on welfare or any one of social services or anything, but it is necessary to let you have a boogeyman in order for you not to look at what the problem really is. If you look at the problem, Trump is coming out. Trump has a whole lot of support right now. Trump is getting a lot of support from Appalachian whites, lower educated whites, et cetera. And you ask the question, why? The question is simple, right? If you ask a lot of these people, they feel others are taking away their birthrights. And their birth, I mean, there's a little bit more to that, but I don't want to get into that right now. They believe that others are taking away what should possibly be theirs. And so they gravitate to somebody who talks that way, which is Donald Trump. Donald Trump talks about talking to the man. I'm going to get the man because he's screwing you. But who is really screwing you? The Donald Trump. When Donald Trump decided to make his ties, he could have said, you know what? I am a billionaire. I know that North Carolina used to be the fabric capital of America. And all these other towns used to be dependent on making things like cloth and clothes and these type of things. In as much as I will make less profit than shipping, making my ties overseas, I could bring my factories to the United States, make a little less, but in the process, I could employ Americans. I could do good to these societies, to these communities. I could raise these communities up. And in raising these communities up, make a little bit of profit with it, and it increases my stature as a good person trying to do good by American citizens who I claim I love. But that is not what Trump did. What Trump did, what every other capitalist does. People are commodities. People are just a source of labor for the capitalist structure. I mean, the guys who own capital, they don't know anything. Most of them aren't doctors, lawyers, engineers, garbage men, or these guys that actually make society run. And notice I included garbage men and folks that make the society run because we need them all. We need every profession. These capitalists don't know about any of this, but they have what's required in the system created by someone, in our economic system created by someone else, right? And in that system, the person who has capital, irrespective of how that capital was gained, ill-gained, inherited, or otherwise taken, stolen, that person with capital can then control even the knowledgeable ones, the engineers, the doctors, are still copping to whom the capital is. Now, but the system falls on its face because it's not sustainable. Why isn't it sustainable? As you deplete the people who purchase things, you sell less. As you sell less, you continuously bring the flow of capital down. And when that comes down, what then happens? We're living it right now. Angst that the people in Appalachia, and I'm using Appalachia as a stereotype, the angst that these people are feeling, the angst that a new set of white middle-class Americans are starting to feel, things that they never thought they would feel. They always look at the downtrodden as those other people that look that sort of a way. That doesn't touch me. And because that doesn't touch me, the empathetic nerve that I would normally have is not there. So then I can't see through your eyes. It's a hard thing to do. When the condition is not, I see I have callers. I'll be coming to the callers in a little bit. When the condition is not of you, it takes an extra bit of effort to be empathetic so you can live through that other person's eyes, so you can walk in that other person's shoes. It's a cliche, but it's true. It's a cliche, but it's true that in order for us to be really this united America, we all have to make that that attempt to look through other folks' eyes. And let's see, Robert, Appalachian whites are afraid of green energy. Well, it's interesting because, Robert, there's a group of Tea Party people in Georgia, I don't remember the name of the group, that are actually strong advocates of green energy, and they're making the case right now that they can actually sell to a lot of the coal producing states like West Virginia, some parts of Pennsylvania, etc. That could actually make a difference. And to put it bluntly, if Hillary were smart, as opposed to only talking to some of her base, she could actually increase her base even in Appalachia by using the coal to green energy issue. The retraining of the coal folk into green energy would do two things. She could sell that policy as protecting their health, because the conditions in these mines are horrendous. The diseases that these miners get are horrendous. So she could actually go in there and tell them, I have a better solution for you. Not that you are going to keep digging black coal to get black lungs and hurt yourself in the long run and be unhealthy in the long run, while the fat cats who own the mine reap the benefits without ever going in there and seeing the conditions that you live. So yes, Lisa, listening so essential. HRC favors solar for all. You're absolutely right. So if you go into these places and you don't have to go in by yourself, but have so many people out there making that case. But what happens is the way we do a lot of politicking right now is interesting. What we do is as follows. We divide up the country and we figure out all the quick limbs that we can get to. In other words, we can hit a lot of big sectors rather quickly. But the homework necessary to hit some people who have been completely and entirely conditioned against you, I spoke to a couple of them in Starbucks yesterday. It's not easy, and it's time-consuming, but you have to build your army to do that, and I think Hillary Clinton has the ability in the next 5 weeks, to put it bluntly, to start building up that army to do that. But anyway, let me kind of get to what we want to talk about on the show right now. Thanks, and by the way, listeners, thank you for those great, you know, for moving the conversation in that area, because I think it is always best if it is you who are controlling the conversation as far as what we want to talk about. And I see that we have two callers on. I'll be coming to you in a second. But folks, let me first tell you, today we will talk about Trump's misogyny. We'll talk about how the Trump campaign is attempting to use the mainstream media to change the conversation from Trump's misogyny to a fall Clinton problem with women. Notice what I said, a fall Clinton problem with women. We'll touch on Howard Dean's tweet raising the question of Trump's substance abuse. Many people are upset that he did that because they thought it changed the conversation. I thought it also changed the conversation as well. But I think it is necessary to change the conversation, because I wonder many times, based on the way this guy seemed to be insomniatic and also seemed to be, to put it bluntly, like he has some sort of ADHD or whatever the right terminology is, I think it's worth asking, maybe not cocaine, maybe Adderall, I don't really know, but I think it's worth exploring given his erratic behavior, his inability to concentrate. All of that is important because, again, this is a guy that's going to be sitting in the White House. Howard Dean is taking a lot of flack. He did the right thing. And you know how else you know that? When he said it, the amount of folks that came out, I said, my God, I was thinking the same thing. I just didn't want to bring it up. So anyway, folks, what are your thoughts? Let's talk. I will also be following you on politics, hashtag politics done right. My Twitter is Egberto Willis. I want to ask you guys to do something important. Please go on Facebook to and search for Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis and like the page. We need to increase the likes on this page so that we can increase our reach beyond Facebook. Of course, we have our our airwaves as well that we do on KPFT 90.1 FM that we do. We're going to talk about that as well. But anyhow, I think you kind of understand what time it is right now. Right? Well, maybe if I push the button and do it. It's time for the weekly blog post. All right, this is a quick and simple blog post, and then I get to the calls. A quick and very simple blog post because it's different than the one that I wanted. I got up this morning, and while I was doing my spinning on my bike, I was listening to AM Joy, Joy Ann Reed, and she had a panel where she brought on a Latina that was a supporter of Donald Trump, and she contorted herself to give reasons why she supported Donald Trump, and in fact started to use the new modus operandi that's occurring in the Trump campaign, which is to accuse Hillary Clinton of actually being responsible for President Bill Clinton's little flirting with women, if you will. Anyhow, the title of it is AM Joy Exposes Trump Teams of Clinton Misogynist, a Failing Attack on Clinton. Here we go. Joy Ann Reed continues her role as a real journalist as she brought in a panel that exposed Trump's team of misogynists as they defended Clinton's value decisions within her marriage. Joe Connison and Lisa Bloom slammed Donald Trump's team, of misogynists' attempt to blame Hillary Clinton for Bill's ill doings and woman shaming. Joe Connison, the author of Man of the World, addressed the Trump campaign's new slurs in Clinton, and this is what he said, quote, "It is misogyny to attempt to blame Hillary Clinton for what her husband did," Connison said. "It is not an accident that this comes from the Trump campaign now, which has hired or brought in Roger Ailes, who was too much of a misogynist for Fox News. He was booted out of there by Rupert Murdoch." Think about that. He was booted out by Rupert Murdoch. Joan Reed pointed out that Roger Ailes and Trump's team of misogynists would be empowered in a Trump organization. Civil rights lawyer Lisa Bloom had some prescient statements herself as well. "Well, it turns out that hiring a guy who was just fired for sexual harassment to help you prepare for a debate against a very smart woman who raises misogyny claim against you was not a great strategy," Bloom said. "Who could imagine such a thing? Women are going to run Trump out of this campaign. Donald Trump walked right into her trap. Ultimately," and this end quote, "ultimately," she said, "it is women who will win this election." And it seemed from the note that I have here on the that I missed a few things in the blog, but I'll go ahead and fix that later. But I want to show you guys something here for those that are watching it on Facebook, because I want you to see who the team, this is, these are Trump's team of misogynists here. And I know with this camera, you get a reverse reflection on it, but those are the guys that's who's running Trump's team. Okay. That is who's running his policies. Rudy Giuliani, Steve, you know who he is, the guy who was thrice married, who also divorced his wife in real time announced the divorce of his wife in real time on the national news. We also have, Roger Ailes, who was kicked out of Fox News because of his misogyny against a whole lot of these women, sexual harassment. Newt Gingrich, who can forget, this is a guy who gave his wife divorce papers while she was recovering from cancer in the hospital. Think about that. And Steve Bannon, the guy from the alt-right guy who runs nothing more than Breitbart, the website, the home of the white nationalists. So you think about who, you know, my mother a long time ago used to say things like, you sleep with dogs, you rise with fleas. And if you want to know why Trump is the way he is right now, look at some of his main advisors here. All these guys are misogynists. All these guys are very poor treaters of women. All these guys think they're above anybody else. But anyhow, folks, we're going to go to the phones, and I see that my friend John is here. John, how are you doing today? Come on into the conversation.
Good afternoon, Egberto. How you doing?
So far, so good, my friend. Talk to me. What are your thoughts on the debate? What are your thoughts on the misogyny? What are your thoughts on Coke?
Okay, well, I think it's a great week for Clinton. And, you know, I think the conventional wisdom held up that Clinton would do extremely well during the debates, and also the exposure, you know, of Trump. You know, everybody knows that he runs a fact-free, post-truth campaign.
Right.
You know, you didn't see him on the stage with his opponent, you know, in front of, you know, I guess it was, what, 84 million, something like that. I mean, I guess in a week or two we'll know the exact number. But it's in that area. It's the most people to ever watch a presidential debate. So, I mean, you know, we saw the results, and I think it was a really good performance by Clinton, and I'm very happy about it. I'm glad to see the numbers move. I'd like to see them move a little bit more. And, you know, of course, with the Machado comments, and also, I mean, there were so many things that Trump said during the debate that were absolutely awful, you know, but people saying there wasn't a single moment that was bad. I mean, when he said, you know, or that disqualified him, when he said, you know, I don't pay taxes because I'm smart, I think that was incredibly disqualifying. And I think the campaign has done a fairly good job, but they should be hitting him even more. I mean, it should just
I so agree with you. I don't think they're monopolizing on three particular big, what I call, turning points in that debate. You're absolutely right, John.
Yeah, and so, you know, it was they just need to keep pounding it. And, you know, Biden made some good points and Clinton's made some good points, but I mean, they should be making I know they made one advertisement, but I mean, they should just be pounding this, you know. You know, unfortunately, the mindset, you know, since the trickle-down era has been, you know, don't pay taxes, you know, keep this selfish attitude, and the only thing that matters are you and your individual family, you know, and taxes are bad. And, you know, that's one of the major factors in improving this country. We have to go beyond that attitude to get to the attitude that was prevalent, you know, in the post-World War II era to the trickle-down era, that, you know, everybody deserves some prosperity, that the middle class deserves prosperity. And that happened, you know, to a great degree from the 1950 to 1970 especially.
Right.
And we need to go back to those tax rates, and the upper class should pay its fair share. And, you know, just continue to hit him. You know, I've heard a lot of pundits talking about, you know, how we should make this, you know, make it, this is like a Romney debate, because, you know, let's get back down to the basics. And you were talking about that, you know, a few weeks ago. Let's talk about the real issues, Republicans versus Democrats, economic issues, social issues, because the Democrats obviously have a much better attitude towards helping poor people, towards helping the LGBTQ community, towards helping women. I mean, and so, you know, let's just keep emphasizing those things, and hopefully the Senate is nudging also a little bit towards the Democrats. And so it's been a really good week, and I just hope it continues.
Well, like, this very good week should continue if the cards are played right. And I think we're going to see I don't know if you saw last night Bill Maher, okay? If you watched Real Time with Bill Maher last night, and I don't remember the name of the Trump surrogate that was on, but the guy who was on last night, he was completely unhinged. He didn't allow any of the other people whenever they started talk, his plan was continuously interruption so that they couldn't get a complete thought through. I think Hillary Clinton needs to be ready in the other debate for a combative type Donald Trump. And as much as it's supposed to be a town hall format, I think she has to be prepared for him to while she's talking, interrupting and saying things and trying to make it a brawl. So I think that is one of the things. Now, I want to get to a few people here on our live feed. Pantheon said, question, should we drug test presidents and CEOs since they believe that it's okay to drug test the poor who require government assistance? You know, that's an interesting thing, especially now. I think more than likely, first of all, Pantheon, let me tell you that is, I don't know if that would be constitutional because it's not a requirement stated in the Constitution for the presidency. Whether the legislative branch can dictate that the executive can, can dictate a law of that nature, it's above my pay grade to know the exact legalities. But I do know one thing, and that is the legislative branch cannot do anything to influence the executive or the judicial branch. That's why we have this thing known as separation of powers, to make them so as independent as possible in their function, so that no particular leg in our triad, if you will, can make any changes. Your next question from Pantheon is, it's amazing how the people who actually live off the welfare of the government's money aren't being drug tested, but we are forcing it on the poor. You're absolutely right. Think about all the drug industrial complex, the war industrial complex, or what we call the defense industrial complex. There's nothing, a lot of people, when they hear welfare, they think welfare is what those poor people get, food stamps or EIC or whatever you call these different programs. That's not the welfare in this country. That's not where most of the money goes. That is peanuts. The welfare in this country is what companies get. All those companies that have those guys in Washington that get the monies for Medicare, that get the monies for Obamacare, that get the monies for building streets and roads and all of that, is where the big welfare program is. Because what it is, it's a real transfer of wealth. Think about this. When a street is built by a private company, within that building of the street, there's this stuff called profit, right? In other words, we want to build a road, and what the government does, it puts up bids, and private companies come and they bid on roads to build, right? And all these guys are going to do is build a road and pour cement, right? There's no new kind of innovation that is needed there to build those particular roads that the government are building. But because of the way our system works, we're going to tell them, okay, we're going to let the private system build the roads. Okay, fine. You must realize the following is true. When the government uses external forces like the private sector to do services that they can otherwise do, that is welfare for a few. The guy who owns a construction company. Could we have had a government agency that just says for building, when we need to build certain things, we hire, and when we don't need to build certain things, we lay off, and then we don't have to pay what's called a profit expense? No, that sounds funny. I always talk about it. Profit when serving the population as a whole is an expense. All right? In other words, if I am bidden to do government work for a profit, something that the government could already do at a cheaper than I could, that is known as that is also, or should be considered, welfare. In that case, profit is an expense. A lot of people, when I make these comments, say, you're a socialist. It's not about being a socialist. It's about being honest. I am not saying that we shouldn't have the government go ahead and form these out to private companies, but let's be honest about what we're doing. When we're doing that, we are enriching a few. We are creating good work for some, but we are also ensuring that the profit, the delta, goes to a few. As long as we understand these things and are straight about it, it's fine. I'm not saying not to do it. I wouldn't. If I were a dictator, I would have strict separations between what government does and what private sector does. Strict separation we don't in this country, and in doing so, we have allowed corporations to pilfer us. Anything else you want to add? Wait, let me see if Pantheon, Nora releases that. Yeah, go ahead, John.
Yeah, I just I think that one of the things during the debate that that reminded me of the Bernie days, and I mean, I don't mean to go back because I mean everybody, you know, I mean I definitely want Clinton to win, but I mean we got to be we got to be with reality here. But I mean, you know, when they were talking about reappropriation of all the corporate money. And Clinton was not very good on that. I think that basically what Trump was saying was that, you know, these corporate leaders basically rule this, and we have to, like, bow down to them as the government. He was saying, oh, yeah, and Obama ought to get together, and we ought to bring all this money back, you know. And, you know, the truth is, and this is what Bernie was talking about, is that we ought to change the laws to not allow them to do that. I mean,
exactly.
Right. And so, you know, I kind of wish she would have said that. I understand that that's kind of one of the major differences between her and Bernie. But, you know, she was, you know, fairly good on the taxes. She was good on, you know, the failure of trickle-down economics. Not so good about the tax reappropriation. And I think that really should be explained to people that, you know, what these corporations are doing is because, you know, they have bought these politicians and they pass laws to, you know, for them. And, you know, that's what we need to turn around. You know, we need to make it to where the people have the money from these taxes that they should be paying. The effective tax rate is 12%. Everybody says, oh, corporate rate, 35%. No, it's 12%. And so many of these companies like GE don't pay any taxes at all. And it's ridiculous. And we need to tell these corporations, you will pay your fair share. And, you know, and that's all there is to it. You don't own us, you know. We the people rule this country, and right now all Trump was talking about was that we should bow down to these corporations, and it was shameful, and it should be pointed out more effectively.
Right, I think the reason she doesn't point that out effectively is because she's not where you and I are, and most of the people who followed Bernie Sanders, and it is hard for her to see the cues that would lead her to believe that. In other words, I don't think she's there, right? So, but what I am saying is, I think when she becomes president, we can force her there. I don't think she's there yet. Clinton is still a corporatist, and you know, I'm not saying that as a slur or anything like that. I'm saying she's the one that we, in my opinion, that we should vote for, and after doing so, continue to do her job. And that's all I'm asking. I'm saying let's make an intelligent choice. Now, what do you wait? Let me go ahead and bring in six. I think that's Jack Golden. Jack, quick comment,
all right.
Jack.
Okay, fine. I got a different perspective. I think it's too damn much media attention to Trump. He's a buffoon.
Yes.
Okay. Let me say that I make a prediction that only 10 or 11 states will support Trump.
Right.
And develop very dim view of Twitter, because Twitter, anything goes.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up.
Like crap. I think the media too much attention to Trump to begin with, because all I hear is about the Machado girl.
Right.
And insulting her, and I think it's all true. I just want to make a play on Trump. That's it.
Let me ask you one second.
I just okay, we got to get rid of the profit for all. Maximization of profit.
Right. Let me ask you to hold us. Great. I appreciate that, Jack. I appreciate that, Jack. I want to address something that you said, Jack, that is very important about Twitter. You know, you remember that note that Clinton always mentioned, that phrase that she always says, anyone who can be anyone who can be moved by a tweet or, you know, can be edged on by a tweet, there's something wrong with you. And you kind of alluded to that, Jack. Now, what's also important is, I think now that, first of all, I think what Hillary Clinton did in the debate was brilliant, to use Machado as the catalyst to bring out a whole lot of other issues about women. Because remember, Machado is not only talking about Machado is not only having the conversation, baited. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you. Baited by a tweet. Machado is not only representing Machado as Miss Universe who gained weight and was weight shamed by Senor Trump. Machado was the catalyst for a whole lot of other things women said about Trump. So if you notice what Joyanne Reed did today on AM Joy, she brought out a litany of other things we have on video with Trump saying certain things, and Machado simply gave it context. Now, further on, I tell you what I do want, I hope Hillary Clinton does, and I hope enough people are on social media would repeat these sort of things in order to get the campaign to listen, because the campaign needs some crowdsourcing right now. One, Hillary Clinton, now that we have the women issue with its own life. In other words, Joyanne Reed and everybody and the media has picked it up. It is time now for Hillary Clinton to start telling people what she is going to do for them, what policies she is going to support, and start hammering them and then contrasting them at the same time with that from Donald Trump. My policy for women with kids is this: for taking care of what is that policy for taking your kids to daycare? My daycare policy is this versus Trump's, who simply allows rich people to use the daycare system as yet another tax break. My policy for school and education and school debt is this versus nothing from Donald Trump. And she needs to start making those differences, because Donald Trump is going to remain in the gutter. And what I'm saying is, when she goes up to the other debate and he starts to say, well, Bill Clinton did this with other women and you supported it by calling out Lewinsky and Jennifer Flowers and all of them, let's stop for a minute there. First of all, Hillary Clinton shouldn't be blamed for what Bill Clinton did. And which woman or man, for that matter, who is cheated on, don't also blame the women or the men that it occurs. I mean, that's human nature, and that is not uncalled for at all. I mean, that's not uncalled for at all. So if it is found out, that's what you do. The second thing is, if that is brought up in any debate, she should answer the question, and she has. There's a great answer, and in fact, Joe Connison on Joyanne Reed had a great answer for her, and it went as follows. Hillary Clinton had the conservative position. When her marriage was in trouble, she looked at her vows, and her vows said, for better or for worse, and she did what she promised to do. I'm not telling folks whether that's what you should do or not. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there is an argument for what Hillary Clinton did. And she can circle the rounds on conservatives that pointed out that she saved her marriage. She saved her marriage for her daughter. She saved her marriage for the family. And she did what the good book said to do, and that is forgive. Everything that she did should be spun correctly as what it really is, good morning, Rhonda. How are you doing this morning? Buenos dias, mi amiga de Panama. Okay. Now, so think about it. She needs to spin, I shouldn't even say spin, but explain it in this manner. So as an example, this is what I would say. Okay, Trump comes in and said, you are guilty for calling out those women that your husband abused. That makes you an abuser too. No, Mr. Trump. I was very upset that my husband deceived me and it became public. And what I did is reacted like any other human being would react. And in doing so, I also did what was best for my family. I kept my family together. I had a young daughter. And as opposed to simply thinking about myself, I also thought about my daughter. But let me tell you what is important in this. And you take 15, 20 seconds to say that. End the discussion and move on to, let me tell you, however, what I want to do for the American people. You brought this up about about this issue. I've answered it the best as I will. Now what I want to do is help millennials pay off their student loans. What I want to do is start with green energy and help those in Appalachia, those people in coal country who are suffering right now. I want to help them. The green jobs that we are going to create, I am going to put some green factories out there in West Virginia. They are not going to be leaving the coal mines to welfare. They are going to be leaving the coal mines to jobs in the electrical, in the green energy sector. That's where they're going. They're energy workers. We are going to change the energy they work on. And you continue to move the debate that way. And if she does that, she's not going to get a whole lot of West Virginia. She's not going to get a whole lot of these other places. But what she's going to do is get enough pieces of these other places that her poll numbers would spread. It will spread because national polls, first of all, individual state polls sort of lag sometimes behind the national polls and vice versa. It all depends. I don't know what the correlation is all of the time. But if she start working on these specific issues with these different sectors, talk to millennials, talk to Appalachia, talk to los Latinos, and in these different issues that affect them. And right, Pantheon humanizes her. Sad that we have to say humanize a human, right? But again, if you have a Trump, humanization is in fact necessary. But so those are the things that that she needs to do, and she needs to be polished and ready to do that. The gentleman on Mara last evening tried to spin Monica Lewinsky's work with victims of bullying to what the Clintons somehow did to her. Exactly. And that's what I was talking about earlier, Sarah Benchley. That is what they were doing. That is what his people are doing. And who are his people? His people are the ones that we call, I call them now the team of misogynists. Somebody should make a meme for that. Maybe I'll do that. This is Trump's team of misogynists. For those who are listening on the radio on air, I'm telling them it is Steve Bannon, Rudy Giuliani, Roger Ailes, Newt Gingrich. Four old men from the old times who still consider women and others property. And I mean that. I don't mean that to be exaggerating. They believe they have total control of that. And what do you have total control over? Propiedad, property. Okay. So any other questions? Let's go back to John. John, you want to have anything you want to add to that real quickly?
Yeah, I'm just looking forward to Tuesday's debate. You know, I hope Kane is going to have a good night. You know, I wasn't a great admirer of him. I do like him as a person. I think he's a very nice person. You know, he has a lot of conservative ideas. But I hope he hits Pence in particular – on you know, what the issues that he's really weak on, which are, you know, LGBTQ issues and also women's issues. He's been just really horrible throughout his career on those issues, and you know, obviously economic issues also. And also, I just want to say hello to Jack, and I'm glad you're doing well, Jack. I know you've been calling in for years, and I know you said you were going to have an operation, so I'm really glad to hear from you.
Jack is one of our great guys, longtime followers all of the time. Now, let me say something about Kane. I have been impressed with the way he campaigns on the stump. it's not the Tim Kaine that I thought we would have seen, because I am with you where he's much too conservative for me. But given that he's running on Hillary's ticket, I have been very surprised at not only how good he is, but how hard-hitting he has become. If you listen to him on the stump, it's amazing that he's not scared to call out Trump. He's not scared to ridicule Trump where Trump needs ridiculing. So I don't see how he doesn't win the debate. The problem is presidential debates have very little impact on the entire race itself. All it does is it has two news cycles and then it's over. So the one thing is that you do want to win that news cycle, because right now you want to win as much as you can in an election like this. But I tell you something, I have a Tea Party friend here that I was at Starbucks last night, and he came in and, you know, he was going to Verizon, and anytime he goes that area and he checks to see if I'm in there, you know, Starbucks is my second office now. And he came in and he saw me and he said, Egberto, what's up? I said, everything is fine. And he said, I know who you're voting for. And I said, of course. And I said, who are you voting for? He said, Trump. And it kind of took me aback, because this guy is a pretty smart dude. He's an investor as well, and an investment banker. And the interesting thing about him is that, as you know, John, most investment bankers and these other guys on Wall Street, they are not fans of Trump at all. But he is. And what really struck me was his justification for voting for Trump. He acknowledged every single one of Trump's flaws. He acknowledged them. He didn't run from them. He didn't do anything about it. He acknowledged all the man's flaws. And then he said, but when I put it on balance with Hillary Clinton, it's a binary election and I have to go with Trump. Look at how he raised his kids. Nobody could have kids like that if they were all that flawed. Yes, he has a problem in being sort of a misogynist. I looked at him and I said, hey, dude, you're actually my friend. Can't you see this through my eyes? His next question was, but can you see it through my eyes? To which I said, yes, I can. I can actually see through your eyes what you are not seeing, what you choose not to see. I mean, it was a friendly conversation, but what I try to explain to him is, I then turned him on to the different editorials from conservative papers that have never, ever endorsed a Democrat before, who are now begging Americans to elect this Democrat because this guy represents a clear and present danger to the country. And his answer to that, well, you know, I have a whole lot of respect for Bill Bennett, Newt Gingrich, and a couple others. To which I said, look, I have to get back to processing my radio show from KPFT. Said I have to get back to that. I don't have the time to talk right now, but sometime we're going to have to sit down and start talking point for point. The problem here, John, and all the folks listening here, is that there is a metastasis in the minds of many. There is a metastasis in the minds of many that's hard to get rid of. And they simply will be able to justify a Trump vote irrespective of what Trump says. And in fact, I'm writing about this incident today with a blog. And what I did is I found the video where Donald Trump said, I could stand up in the middle of New York and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose not one of my followers. And then next to that, I play a little video from a couple of women who said, Trump is our God. We've been waiting for this. And that is the kind of psychology we have from some of the Trump supporters. Why am I telling you this? I'm telling you this because to say this isn't an election that folks can sit out and say, well, he could not possibly win. There are two things that have to occur in this election. One thing is, yes, he cannot win, but also he cannot lose by 2 or 3 points. Trump needs to lose by a landslide. And I'm not just talking about an electoral landslide. I'm actually talking about a popular landslide. Because there's something that I heard quite a few people talking about on some of these stations, which is true. And that is, if such a flawed candidate with this type of an attitude makes it a close race, it shows that within America, there are enough people, that enough politicians can follow his modus operandi, a modus operandi of division, a modus operandi of lying, a modus operandi on lying that isn't called out, not by the media, lying that is not called out by the average American citizen, lying that the average American citizen just accepts. If we ever reach to the point, exactly, we can't take it for granted, Rhonda. If we get to the point where we accept outright lies from politicians, if we get to that point, we are doomed. We are completely doomed if we get to that point. 612, who do I have the honor of speaking with? Is this
good
Jack
afternoon,
again?
Sir, my name. No, good afternoon, sir. My name is Mike.
Mike, talk to me. How are you doing, my friend? Go ahead.
You brought up an interesting point that, and when you talked about pointing out lies and believing lies. I mean, in this election, honestly, regardless of who you support, this is not the election to talk about honesty, because these are probably the two most dishonest candidates we've probably had in quite some time. And all you got to do is look at the polls and actually look at the trustworthy numbers. Both Trump and Clinton have really high untrustworthy numbers. So it's neither of them, neither are honest. So that argument for either one wouldn't work because they're both dishonest. That's just a fact, really. But when it comes to analyzing this, the thing when it comes to politics, and it's something that I try to get people to understand, is we have to stop getting into identity politics. We need to stop choosing candidates based on who they are, what they look like, what they've said in the past, whether bad or good. Those things really should be irrelevant because everybody's got character flaws. There's no ideal person who's got this flawless record. What we should focus on is what are their actual policies, ideas, and plans, and how do they benefit the economy both in the short term and in the long term? That's what, as Americans, we need to get back to focusing on.
Let me interrupt you for one quick second, Mike, because, first of all, I agree with most of what you said. Now, when you talk about the similarities between the trustworthiness between Hillary and Trump, I must say that, yes, she has some problems, and I've written about a whole lot of her problems, but I also must tell you that the differences are stark. And what I'm also saying is that the reporting, the bad reporting that we have is also bad. So a lot of the angst people have against Clinton is unjustified. Some of it, they are justified, but most of it is unjustified. I'm closing near the end of the time, and I want you to finish what you have to say. And because I want to close out thereafter, I'll continue a little bit longer on Facebook. But continue, please, Mike.
Yeah, I just want to say, when it comes to the trade deals, is such an important issue. And I just feel Americans, for the most part, are not truly aware of how much of an impact. And I want people to understand that both Democrats and Republicans both went and made these bad trade deals, not because they were dumb or they didn't know what they were doing. They made these deals specifically because they're being bought out by corporate lobbyist groups.
Mike, I got to stop you right there. You're right.
Yeah.
Mike, you're right. I got to stop you there because I only have 2 minutes. I want to ask you another question.
Okay.
First of all, I know all of that. And with all of that, there are only two candidates that are going to win, either Hillary or Trump. We don't have that's what's going to happen. Now, a lot of folks are talking third party or otherwise. It ain't going to happen. Realistically speaking, one or the other is going to occur. What I'm telling you is the reason personally I am voting for Hillary is Supreme Court justices, and when she gets in there, our grassroots movement that will include you, who's against TPP, we will work towards moving the country, but we have to do our job. You follow what I'm saying?
But she's for TPP.
I am not doubting what you're saying, my friend. I think you're absolutely right. She wasn't. But we can actually get something done with Trump. That's a red herring. But look, as you see, I only have 6 seconds. But Mike, I can continue this on Facebook. If you go to Facebook Live, we can continue talking about this. Look, I really do appreciate you calling in. Keep listening, and we'll keep talking and moving things forward. Because, again, you engaging and everybody else engaging is what it's going to take. All right, my friend?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
You have a wonderful day. And thanks for calling in. Thanks for your opinion, my friend. Okay, John, give me 5 seconds. 5 seconds.
All right, good show. Looking forward to the debate Tuesday, and always looking forward to your show on Thursday on KPFT.
Thank
3
you,
o'clock
folks.
Central.
Thank you, my friend. Folks, this is Politics Done Right on Coffee Party Radio. Egberto Williams is my name. tune in every week. Next week, we have two shows. Eventually, we're going to be doing some more shows as well. We're cutting it out now on Blog Talk Radio, which is going to be shutting me off right now. Adios. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.